Clay? This is our Lands 2020 briefing. We have Clay Sprague, our Lands Division Manager, and Lori Vieg, Environmental Planner with the Wildlife Program.
All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. Just for the record, my name is Clay Sprague, Lands Division Manager, Department of Fish and Wildlife. And with me is Lori Vieg, who is our project manager for the Lands 2020 process. What we'd like to do this afternoon is kind of provide you an overview of the 2020 process, how it helps us achieve our goals and objectives, talk a little bit about land acquisition history, and then overview the process. And then Lori will focus on presenting the 2015-17 project proposals that we'll be moving forward with. That's a little hard to see, isn't it? Well, land acquisition is one conservation tool that the department has to help us meet the mission of the agency, which you've seen here and you've seen before, I'm sure, but also to meet our strategic goals that are in our strategic plan, particularly goals 1, 2, and 3 that talk about conserving and protecting native fish and wildlife, providing sustainable hunting and fishing opportunities, and promoting a healthy economy. So while land acquisitions help us do that, there's also many other tools that the department uses to help achieve the agency mission and achieve these goals. There are several regulatory mechanisms in place that the department interacts with, for example, the Hydraulic Projects Approval Act, Forest Practices Act, but the department also engages in projects related to species augmentation, so to bolster the population of endangered species as well as game species. We also work a lot with local government, so we have our priority and habitats species database that local government uses, particularly in growth management planning and expertise from Department of Fish and Wildlife. We also engage in private land partnerships. I think the most prominent one is the Coordinated Resource Management Program, but also CRP program and SAFE programs. And we do use land transactions, but this also includes conservation easements as well as acquisition, as well as doing enhancement projects on wildlife property to enhance habitat. So these are all tools that we have available and use. So getting back to acquisition, our very first land acquisition was for the Sinlahiquan Wildlife Area in 1939. And we're actually celebrating the 75th anniversary of that this year. And I think you were mailed an invite to the, yeah, if I'm not mistaken, to the June 7th launch of that summer-long celebration. So we're pretty excited about that. But that was our first acquisition. And so just looking at kind of the history of acquisition over time, started small in 1940 with those 80 acres that were purchased for Mule Deer Winter Range. And then from 1940 to 1970, there was several programs that came into place, or federal programs, the Pittman-Robertson Act and the Dingell-Johnson Act, that gave us additional funding sources, as well as the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And so we increased our acreage to about 340,000 acres up through the 70s. Between 1970 and 1990, our land base expanded a little slower, but we did get additional funding sources known as mitigation funding from Public Utility District, the Corps of Engineers, and this was money to acquire land to mitigate for the impact of dams, construction, and relicensing. And then in 1990, the Washington State Legislature passed the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program, which is still a major funding source today, to acquire lands for critical habitat. And I'll get in a little more into the funding sources here in a little bit. And we also got access to another federal program through the Federal Endangered Species Act called Section 6 that also provides money for a critical habitat. So as a result of all these programs and this history, today the department actually either owns or manages close to 1 million acres of land in about 33 wildlife areas that you see represented, or you can barely see, represented in yellow on this particular map. And we've also now managed well over 700 water access sites for fishing and water-related recreation. So I want to get into the acquisition process. This is actually a slide that you've seen from Dan Budd quite a bit when he presents his, but I'm going to focus on the first two steps of this four-part process, the scoping and need and the evaluation and prioritization process. So back in 2012, the department did an exercise where it scoped out kind of the habitat needs, the critical habitat needs, and the priorities for acquisition across the state, and developed a set of statewide priorities for acquisition. And I'm just going to briefly review those for you. The aquatic habitats component, this involves wetlands and in-stream and marine-type habitats are priorities. Critical habitat for specific species, this can be winter range for ungulates as well as endangered species habitat for animals like the western gray squirrel or the prairie grouse. Certain terrestrial habitats are priorities, like oak woodlands, channel scablands, pine lands, and west side prairies. And then we have other priorities for acquisition pretty much around recreational access to public waters, so our access sites, as well as securing lands for public hunting and fishing. At the same time in 2012, when the department identified their strategic priorities for acquisition, they also developed a set of principles to use when acquiring lands. And as you see here, that was to really utilize partnerships to the greatest extent possible, either additional funding sources or support for land acquisition, evaluate closely whether acquisition is actually the best conservation tool. I mentioned all those other ones that we have at our disposal, so we want to be sure that we're acquiring what needs to be acquired when another tool won't work. We want to pursue lands that provide long-term opportunities for perpetual habitat needs and lands that provide long-term ecological value. We also place a higher value on lands that create blocks of ownership. So I think we can be much more successful meeting our objectives if we manage larger landscapes as opposed to individual small parcels. It's not to say smaller parcels don't have value, but we want to try to tend away from actual fee acquisition of those smaller isolated parcels and look at other tools like conservation easements or non-fee title options. And then, most importantly, prioritize lands that are ecologically and socially important for the long term. So given the statewide priorities and these principles, then the Lands 2020 process is a process that's used to evaluate and prioritize actual lands for acquisition. In the 2020 process, there's five major pieces to that. The first step is actually identifying a parcel that meets one of those statewide priorities. And this is carried out in our regional offices. So our district biologists play a big role in going out and identifying properties that meet these statewide priorities. And actually then assemble those parcels at the region for a region program review that's run by the regional director. So they run a process, cross-program process, where they evaluate the parcels. And again, looking at the statewide priorities, do they meet the statewide priorities? Once that process is done, the regional director then forwards the proposed parcels from that region to headquarters, to the Lands Division, where we actually go through another technical review process at headquarters level, where we evaluate once again, is this property meet our statewide priorities? Is acquisition the best tool? Ask those same questions. And I forgot to mention that part of the regional program review, one of the big pieces there is public outreach, working with local county officials to make sure that the local officials are aware of what we're proposing to do. Getting back to the headquarters review, then once we run through that technical review process, we would present that information to the executive management for additional discussion, and we also then ask the director or go to the director for his approval to move those projects forward once we've done the EMT review, executive management review, and at that point we then post the projects on the website for public comment, and we come to the commission, as we're doing right now, then to review these proposals with you to provide your opportunity to provide feedback. We're actually just presenting today, but you're going to have a period of time in which you can comment to us if you wish on any of the proposals. Following a commission review and following all the comments, we then go back to the director for a final approval to actually move forward to make application to get the grant funding to acquire the properties. Just really quick on the grant sources that we that we utilize. I already mentioned the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program is a major source of funding in those categories. There's three federal programs, the Section 6 program, which I already mentioned. There's also a program called the Duck Stamp Program that's interested in acquiring land for waterfowl habitat, and the North American Wetland Conservation Act for wetland acquisition. And then finally, there's another state program known as the Aquatic Land Enhancement Account. These monies are used to acquire lands that foster access and recreation to the public waters of the state. So then we move into the land transaction process. That's something you're pretty familiar with. That's what Dan usually presents when he comes. That this is a process where we do appraisal of the property. Once we've received the grant funding, we do the review of the appraisal, we negotiate the purchase, we enter into a purchase option, and then it comes back to you, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, for final approval on that transaction. And then once approved, if approved, we close the transaction and it becomes wildlife property. And at that point in time, we usually integrate it into one of our wildlife area, and subject to the wildlife area planning process, if it's an access site, then we move forward with access development and management for recreational purposes. I think finally, while we're often acquiring these properties to meet those statewide priorities I talk about, they also provide other values that our partners are interested in. These lands can provide open space that helps protect water quality and quantity. We seek to maintain the working land base so that these are hopefully contributing to forestry and agricultural working lands. Obviously provide outdoor recreation opportunities and do in many cases, contribute to rural economies. And we do have a lot of partners that we're working with that share those values, and I'm not going to list them all, but there's quite a few and growing every year that we're involved in this. So that's my part of the presentation. Any questions on process before I turn it over to Lori?
Thanks. Good job.
Okay. Thank you.
Very clear.
I'll turn it over to Lori Vigue.
Good afternoon. I'd like to present the 13 projects statewide that we have for Lands 2020 this year. And this is the big year where we're actually going after WWRP funds. So it's more, we have a lot more projects than we do. It goes usually every other year. So one of the things that the common themes that these projects had, so I don't have to repeat it in each one, is most of the projects were connected to public lands and also existing public lands, and there's also strong connectivity values for fish and wildlife in each one of these projects. And there's also recreational values. Most of them, all of them, have fishing, hunting, and wildlife viewing in them as well. So. So Region 1 this year had three proposals, the Kettle River, Reardon Audubon Lake, and Mountain View. And Mountain View, you've probably are all familiar with. This is a multi-phase project that's going through its fourth. This is the fourth phase of funding, which is going for WWRP and Section 6 funding. And it the values is it preserves working land partnerships. It has ponderosa pine, grasslands, interior grasslands, and riparian habitat, as well as ESA-listed steelhead. And Reardon Audubon Lake, which is located near Swanson Lake, since it's actually part of the near the Swanson Lake's wildlife area, has Palouse Prairie grasslands, channeled scablands, and it has more than 100 species of birds.
Lori, pardon. Yes. Commissioner Holtzmiller, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you. Now, is this further 4-0 ground, or is this?
Yes, ground? Yes. It's yeah, yes, it's a 4-0 ranch for Mountain View. Correct. Yes. Okay, so Reardon has over 100 species of birds that visit. It's a big area for birders. And it also, let's see, that one is actually 150 acres. It's phase two, and it's going for WWRP funds as well, probably urban or I think riparian. And then also Kettle River, which is located in the very corner of the very west, northwest corner of Ferry County, is a combination of a conservation easement and water access. And it has old growth forest, east side step, aspen, and riparian habitat. And it has red band trout spawning. And it's a big area for river access, which is very limited in that area. And then for Region 2, we have two projects. We have the Grand Coulee, which is a continuation of the Mid-Columbia, which you've probably seen before. And it has, this is a large contiguous area, shrub steppe habitat. It's highly valued for core area for grouse species. And it also has a potential for public boating and public access as well. And this is 4,100 acres, and the total acreage that they're looking at over time is going to be over 20,000 acres. And then we also have Tunk, which is a critical habitat for sharp-tailed grouse. And that is a 2,200-acre parcel, and it's one of the last remaining contiguous blocks of shrub steppe in eastern Washington. And they're looking at a WWRP critical habitat grant for that.
One other comment about that one. That's going to be a conservation easement, not a fee acquisition.
Correct.
Commissioner Kaney.
Just a quick question. What's the landowner there?
I don't have the name of the landowner. I could get that okay. For you.
I don't know that.
Yeah. I'm assuming that in all of these, whoever is the landowner is all for these. These are willing landowners that want this process, that whether it's an easement or an acquisition.
Has to be a willing landowner.
Yep.
Yes,
okay, thanks.
Absolutely.
Okay, so for Region 3, we have three proposals. We have Heart of the Cascades, which you've probably also seen before. That's a multi-phase project in the heart of the Cascades and the Central Cascades. And this project is focused on the I-90 corridor. And it's also and that's for Section 6, and then for WWRP, that's Manastash and also in holdings of L.T. Murray project. This has habitat values of ponderosa pine, Douglas fir, and it is critical habitat for spotted owl, wolverine, large carnivores, and steelhead. And it also, it's right next to the Tiana Way, so we're locking up some great connectivity areas in this area. It's been a really successful project. And then we have Koichi, which is down near Oak Creek Wildlife Area. That's a multi-phase project as well. And this is a migratory corridor for wintering elk. It also has oak woodlands and shrub steppe habitat. And it has critical salmon habitat as well. And then the last one in Region 3 is the Tanum Creek floodplain, which is actually being funded by BPA, as well as they're going to acquire some WWRP funds riparian habitat for that. And that has ESC listed salmon, and it is riparian floodplain and aquatic habitats, and also has elk and mule deer wintering habitat. And then for Region 4, we have two projects on the coast. It would be actually located near Puget Sound, and it's actually Skagit Delta Recreation, and it is Pacific Flyway from migratory waterfowl, and it has ESA listed salmon in the area, and this is actually one. It's a unique project. They're actually looking for NOTCA funds, Land and Water Conservation funds, or possibly duck stamp, and they're looking at. This site is kind of like treated as mitigation for the estuary restoration work that they're doing when they're opening the dikes for salmon recovery. They're mitigating by providing waterfowl hunting for those, and then also it has farmland values. So they're trying to gain partners in that project as well. And EB Island is also part of that in Region 4, where it's a Pacific Flyway mitigation riparian and wetland habitat, and it has ESA-listed salmon in the area, and it's a big one for waterfowl hunting, both of those projects are. And then for Region 5, we have two projects, the Simcoe and Merrill Lake. For Simcoe, That is a 6,000-acre project. It has deer winter range and western gray squirrel recovery, and that is mid-Columbia steelhead spotted owl recovery. And it's part of a larger multi-phase project. I think they're looking at over 18,000 acres over time to acquire that project.
On that particular project, we're working very closely with the East Klickitat Conservation District to try to form a partnership to both preserve critical habitat but also continue to provide working grazing on that particular property.
And then Merrill Lake is one that was, it came back, it was presented a couple years ago for approval and down in Region 5, and it has unique habitat with old growth. It has lava beds, forested shorelines, and riparian wetlands, ESA-listed species, and this is a really important wildlife access and trails for horse folks, and it's very popular in that Clark County Cowlitz area. And also for Region 6, we have West Rocky Prairie, which is located near Scatter Creek in Thurston County. And this is, it's presented as 220 acres, and I have a little bit of a news briefing on that. But it's important for prairie oak wetland habitat, and it's an excellent site for reintroduction of prairie species as well. And we have an update where recently agency staff met with the port this week, and they're willing to sell that property to us. So it actually looks like it's going from 220 acres to over 700 acres is something they're going to start negotiating. So that's good news. And Forterra is a big partner in that, has a lot of interest in working with us on that one. And I think that's all I have for the overview of projects.
Any questions for Lori? No. Sounds like a very good list.
Okay, yes. And then just this is an overview of we actually went to the public in about over 2 weeks in January and presented on our website all of the projects. You'll get an opportunity to review them as well. But we had a really good, I think, response from the public on these. We had, and this is, I have updated numbers on this, so it's actually we received 154 comments and 131 were supporting the projects. And we actually had a letter writing campaign for TUNC, and that, which is in Okanagan County, and we received 68 letters of support for that project. And then we have 21 folks that were opposed. Okay, so the highlights of the public comments overall, the public highly supported conservation and recreation. I mean, it seemed like we heard a lot that birding, hunting, and fishing are important recreational aspects that people wanted to have with our lands. And then also they pointed out that recreational access is becoming more and more limited on our lands because private lands are being locked up by industrial timberlands, either locking them up for public access or charging high prices. So there's a lot of value to our new lands. Also, and these were the main concerns that we had. There's like four, I think, main concerns, and probably nothing that's you haven't heard before, but it's concerns with counties losing their working lands, and that has to do with losing their tax base. And we've heard that. And our response to that was that conservation easements provide local economic benefits for working lands.
And just to comment on that, we are increasingly trying to evaluate the use of conservation easements, particularly for that concern, because it seems like a pretty good tool where if we can still protect the habitat value but still allow the landowner to keep the property, keep managing it, and as working as well as continuing to pay taxes, and that's kind of a tool that we're increasingly looking at using.
And the second was that folks weren't in agreement with how we currently manage our lands, and we're actually, in our response to that, is we're just starting off a pretty aggressive new management, wildlife area management planning process that's going to be heavily involved with input from the public, so they'll have opportunity throughout that Preach Wildlife Area to provide comments on our new planning documents. And also the lack of operations and maintenance funding. We also, with the Discover Pass revenues, we've actually increased our O&M funds throughout our wildlife areas, which has really helped us. And then also the comment about we're not paying taxes on property, and our response has been that we do support PILT, and it's subject to legislative appropriation, and it's not fully funded this biennium. Okay, and next steps. The director is going to approve these projects, and then Clay, the Lands Division Manager, will announce the approved projects to the regions. And next Friday, March 14th, is the RCO Lands Forum, where all the projects will be presented again for further public comment. And also, after that, the project sponsors, the regions, will start developing their applications for submittal. For WWRP, those applications are due May 1st. And just like Clay mentioned earlier, the commission has the opportunity to comment on all these proposals until the end of the month. And you can send your comments to Tammy on that, and then they'll be routed to Clay and myself. And the actual projects are on the main page of our website, so mm-hmm. It's really easy to find. And also, just another comment I have is we have one other proposal that came in late, and it's from Region 1. It's called Chapman Lake, and it's a recreational access project, and it's open up for public review right now for about 3 weeks, and it will be presented to the commission meeting in April for comment.
And just one last comment on the Lands Forum. That's the Habitat and Recreation Lands Forum that was created by legislation, I think, in 2010. But one of the main purposes of that was to give an opportunity for local legislators to actually come and see the proposals. Okay. So it's geared around the legislative session so they can come in and do that, as well as the general public. So,
which other agencies are involved in that?
So it's WDFW and then State Parks and DNR and the Recreation and Conservation Office, RCO.
Okay. So everyone presents their list?
Every state agency presents their proposed projects for the next biennium, yes.
Okay, thanks. Questions, anyone? Commissioner Mankin first.
Looking at your public comments section here, you have one that's in support of land acquisition in general, which is, I agree with. It's supporting, they support any acquisition that has to do with wildlife conservation and recreational access. And then starting with number two, there is the hurt starting. It's hunting and fishing access is becoming limited, and more properties are being purchased by private entities. And it goes down, counties are losing working lands, not in agreement with current land management strategies. Lack of operations and maintenance funding, state does not adequately pay taxes on the property. I have voted every time for acquisition of land, but I am very concerned about the comments that I think come properly, primarily from Eastern Washington. And despite the fact that there were only 21 opposed, they have a longer wash list of concerns. And one of those is concern that was always spoken to by former Commissioner Chuck Perry, and I want to ask that same question. In spite of the fact that we're now getting Discovery Pass funding for the management of these lands, my concern is that enough to pay for the long-term commitment that we have for the management of those lands? And if that does not cover it, where is that money coming from?
So in terms of this biennium, that Discover Pass revenue, we estimate is giving us enough money to deal with the basic operation and maintenance costs required on the properties. We're making much more of an effort to identify in these proposals what we think the operation and maintenance costs are going to be so that we can figure that into our budget planning. I can't say there will always be enough money at any one given time, but our goal, obviously, is to be able to manage these and budget the money to manage these through time, because that's very necessary in order to be able to maintain these properties in the condition we want to maintain them in.
So is this a consolidated, concerted effort to find money that we can kind of set aside, probably not in perpetuity, that's a little too optimistic, but over the long haul will support the operation and maintenance of those lands that we've purchased in the past, as well as the new purchases?
Well, that's certainly a focus, and we have a variety of funding sources that we can plan on to use for that. I mean, some of our federal dollars come in are used for management as well as acquisition, like the PR monies and the DJ dollars. Discover Pass money has been a tremendous help in terms of giving us enough revenue to meet those basic maintenance needs. So, I think it's safe to say that the agency is always going to be concerned about getting enough money to do the O&M, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to identify those and sharpen our pencil when we acquire these properties.
Deputy Director Storr.
Well, if I could just add a little bit to Clay's response, another initiative I think that that has begun recently and I think highlights the attention and importance of this M&O funding question has to do with a partnership that we're building with the WWRC, the coalition. The coalition's made up of all sorts of entities from businesses, recreational businesses, to local governments, and et cetera, and a pretty powerful bunch of folks. They've come to us with a strategy that has half a dozen areas of focus because their interest, again, across a wide range of organizations and sectors, their interest is to continue to provide these recreation conservation benefits that these programs give to us. And they've identified the need to develop sustainable sources of funding for M&O among those six areas of focus. So I'm hopeful that it isn't just the agency that's looking for some sort of sustained capacity. There's a broad base of support for these programs, and WWRC represents a lot of that. So
that's pretty hopeful.
Yeah.
Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's just important to clear up something, and that is to make sure we're understanding that when we're talking conservation easements, which is like the Tunk property that you mentioned, and I think several others in here, all those negative comments essentially vanish. They're really gone. You know, and I think that gets lost so many times. This all gets lumped together, fee acquisition versus conservation easement. So under an easement where the landowner still owns the property, still pays the taxes, can manage that property as they see fit, you know, within some guidelines that are agreed to in that easement, manages it themselves, takes care of the weeds themselves, you know, has to meet the weed board requirements themselves. You know, nothing really changes other than they receive dollars for not developing that property. I just want to make sure that's always clear in front of the commission, that difference. So,
yes, thank you. Yes.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you. Now, if I'm reading this right, these are the acquisitions you intend for 15 through 17, correct?
Right. If we get final approval from the director after the comment period, we would then go forward to make application for funding. It then goes through a whole other ranking process by RCO, and we either get funding or we don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yes.
Well, living in a small community, how rumors can run rampant. You believe very little you hear, not everything you read, or not half of what you read and not everything you see. But I know and that's why I posed that question to you before, whether this Mountain View deal was a continuation of the 4-0. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be way too blunt. I know you're dealing with Flint's. How is this process work of dealing with ranches? When does it become public, or when do we get clued in on it? We've got a group in Assotin County that's really upset about the department buying ground because of PILT payments, how far they are behind, what an impact it's having on our local communities, and just various reasons. And to Director Anderson's credit, he's wanting to address some of these, so hopefully we can move on and address some of these things down the road. But I guess, point of how our assessor kind of leaked the word that you'd been in looking at five different ranches in Assotin County. You own 10% of it now. You know, it's just I'm catching a lot of heat from my neighbors, trust me, over the deal. Mm-hmm. The PILT payments, I thoroughly realize, is a legislative problem. But still, on school district issues where there's got to be X amount of dollars generated, if department lands aren't paying their fair share, the rest of the taxpayers are making up the difference. So it does. It has a big effect on these. And then, just like what Jay said, if it's a conservation easement, it carries on, and we can keep dollars flowing into communities as far as turnover dollars and things like that. It just is having a major impact in these smaller counties.
Yeah, and I know, and you're right, and we've heard from several counties, Okanagan County as well, and I know the director has, for example, in Okanagan County, committed to put a hold on fee acquisitions till we complete some economic studies and only think about conservation easements. And I also know, as you do, Commissioner, that I think there's a lands committee is being formed down in Assotin County that we can work with to provide this information ahead of time before we move forward with anything, so that we can have that airing with counties where these are big issues. And I think that's a positive step forward.
And there again, I thoroughly understand a willing seller or willing buyer. I have a disagreement with your land appraisals, mm-hmm. because if I walked in and wanted to buy a chunk of ground and pay the amount of money you are, if I walked into a banker and say I wanted to pay $1,500 for this chunk of ground, he'd laugh me out the door because you just can't do it. Granted that the 4-0 is a very unique place and it is a cool chunk of ground. But there's just a whole lot of things I have questions about. So mm-hmm. thank you.
Okay. Other comments?
No, thank you. Better shut up.
No other comments? Terrific job, and appreciate that. So we will be seeing these projects as they come before us with funding. Mm-hmm. associated. So thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.